All right, supporting your husband in the ministry. I just wrote, this certainly isn't a complete list. I just wrote down what came to my mind. The first thing I would say is just to pray for him. I think that this is our number one responsibility. I don't think, I know it. It's our number one responsibility. And sometimes we tend to look at our husbands and we see them as victorious, disciplined men of God. We see them as battling the tigers, winning men to Christ, gung-ho in the ministry. And we just almost tend to pray for others more than we do for them. And none of our husbands is more than a step away from falling. And no one knows them like we know them. And it should be true that they share with no one the innermost secrets of their heart like they do you, their wives. And if that is so, then nobody else has the greater responsibility for praying for them. We are the ones that bear that responsibility. And it's easy to say, Lord, bless old John today, and to not pray with wisdom and understanding for them. But you need to be alert, for instance, to scripture verses as you come across them that would be those kind of things which you would pray into your husband's life. You need to be alert to the way Satan would tempt him and pray against those things, like praying against lust, praying against love of money. The scripture makes it very clear that these are big temptations to men. Pray against playing to the wrong audience. It's going to be hard for these guys going to a new campus, for instance, to just play to God, not to Max or the Southern Baptist Convention. Because everybody's going to be watching, all these little churches that are going to have a party in it, and everybody who has a part of your support. And there's going to be a pressure to produce. And it can be a debilitating pressure if you're playing to that audience. So you can certainly pray that for him. And then for his own walk with the Lord, you know, don't take it for granted, but pray that he'll be steadfast in his own walk with the Lord. Learn to pray verses about your relationship with him. Claim some verses from scripture about your relationship with him. And I find it very refreshing to write down different verses of scripture that I pray for my husband and then I pray for our relationship, because whenever you're praying scripture, you don't have to wonder if you're praying in the will of God. And this gives a lot more meat to your prayers. And when you think of a need in his life, look in the scripture and see if there's a verse of scripture, a portion of scripture that speaks to this need. And the more scripture you're praying, the more sound will be your prayers. And the second thing I think of is to realize what your ministry is. And of course, the very first thing that your ministry is simply to be his wife and a homemaker. And the second part of your ministry is to support him in his ministry. This is a hard thing. If you've been involved in having a little going ministry of your own, either as a single girl or I think like Sandy, of a wife whose husband was gone for a year, to suddenly not have all the little girls flocking around you, and you're the big Bible study leader, and they're all coming to you for advice, but suddenly you take a back seat, and your ministry is not the important one. In fact, you may not have one, other than your husband and his ministry. And there needs to be a conviction in your heart that this is of God. Now, some of your husbands may expect that you are Hercules and that you're going to do all these things and carry on the same kind of ministry as you did before you were married. And if he happened to be one of the guys that was with Max and came to Jean's office last week, he probably no longer thinks that. If he was listening. Because Jean tried very much to clear this up. This is very often true with a husband that they want their wife to be a wife, a sweetheart, a lover, a homemaker, and the best thing the ministry's ever had. And it's a rare girl that can do all those things. So you need to settle, of course, with your husband what his vision is for you and what he wants of you. There are some girls who obviously can carry more ministry than others. Now, Sally's a girl that I expect would, because she can do things very quickly and she's thorough, she can think clearly, she can move quickly. I expect she can have the house cleaned, the baby taken care of, four babies taken care of, and a ministry thriving on the side and never neglect her husband. But, you know, not all girls are that way. And so the thing you have to do is list your priorities. And remember that the priority for you as a wife is that the Lord is first, your own walk with Him, and then second is your husband. Third is your children, if you have children. And fourth is your home. And then way down here, number five, is not only ministry, but things like social things. Belonging to a decoupage club or PTA if you have kids that old. You see what I mean? I lump it all together under number five because it's whatever you do outside the home or even whatever you do in the home in either a social or ministry or church way. But the problems I find in my own life is when I let that get all out of kilter. If I keep my priorities straight, it answers a whole lot of questions. But a very juicy ministry thing will come along, and it's usually one that would make me look good. That's the kind I respond to easiest. And some big deal, you know. And I get real spiritual about it and think, boy, I sure ought to take that. And I check with Jimmy, and he'll pray about it and say, honey, I just don't believe you're, you know, able to quite meet everything you've got now. I think your cup's full and overflowing. I just don't believe this is the right time for you to take on anything else. He's always right. But girls have a harder time saying no and knowing when they should say no, generally, than fellas do. So I would say certainly never take on anything that you don't first of all check with the Lord and your husband. And unless your husband gives his wholehearted endorsement, just tell him no. And incidentally, it's a very great thing to have a husband who makes these kind of decisions and helps you, because it takes you off the hook with the ladies who put you under pressure to be a member of the WMU and to be the president of the book club and so on. And you can say, my husband does not want me to do that. It's a very great thing to have a husband who is your safety valve and who takes this kind of care of you. But you need to settle in your own heart that supporting him in his ministry is your ministry. Now, if you have time, you know, beyond all of that, to carry on a ministry, and your husband wants you to, great. But I think you need to not get your heart set on it. I can remember when we were first married, and of course I'd been living, you know, in the Nav home, and we had 13 girls in two houses right before I got married. And, you know, I'd sort of been the lead woman and the mother superior, as being called me. And all of a sudden, you know, it was his ministry. And if the girls would come over or anything, or if I was going to go speak to some girls or something, and I'd go over my message with him, and he'd say, well, honey, right there, why don't you say this? Or, well, I think you ought to add this. I'd find myself bristling and thinking, you don't know girls. I've worked with these girls. I know what to say to them. You don't know anything about except talking to girls. And it was just rankle inside of me because I didn't want him touching my precious ministry, you see. This was my corner. This was my bailiwick. And it was a lesson to learn to have my heart open to his instructions about, you know, the things I was going to say or the things I was going to do. And to not call it my ministry and hold on to it, but to have a heart that's open to the Lord in it. And if you are able to carry on an outside ministry other than your husband, then I think the thing you have to guard is that you never allow your ministry and your mind to be more important than his. Because if you're carrying on your little girl ministry and it conflicts with what he asks of you, the tendency is to think your ministry is more important and to want to hang on to it and to want to put it first. So that's another thing that you have to guard against, is that you keep it in perspective. Who's first? And what's most important? Another thing I guess I would put along with this matter of ministry is, I'm not sure where it fits, it might fit under someplace else here, but another thought along this line is to make sure that your husband feels free and delighted to bring his ministry into your home. And if he calls up and he has an unexpected fellow that he'd like to bring home for supper, or maybe five fellas he'd like to bring home for supper, this can be a very trying thing, and especially if he's already an hour late. And the little, you know, you had two potatoes and two little patties of hamburger, and he said he'd like to bring somebody else. So this can be very trying to you. But if you bristle every time he does this, and if you give him a tongue lashing, pretty soon he'll be spending less time at home and more time away from home in order to carry on the ministry. And so you want your home to be one where he always feels free to bring the ministry into the home. And the more he does this, of course, the more you will have a part in it. And the more the ministry will be the center of, the home will be the center of the ministry, as it should be. And if you make him feel welcome always to your home, which is, of course, his home, and to your service, he will think he is the most fortunate man on the earth, and will pass on this kind of an attitude toward the fellas, to the fellas that he works with. All right, the third thing in supporting him is just to keep the communications open. I would recommend a tape to you, which I have not heard, and which I normally wouldn't do, but Sally has heard it and told me about it, and I know the man who made the tape, so on that basis I can recommend it. It's Henry Brandt. And I'll have to ask her the exact name so you can get it from the tape library, unless maybe Linda knows it. On communication, any of you know Henry Brandt's tape on communication? When we break, I'll ask Sally to give us the name of it. But she was sharing with me just some of the breakdown in communication between a husband and a wife. And she was in this, he covered such things, for instance, as a husband who was a perfectionist, noticing a cobweb. And he stood it for about 7 days, and she never noticed it. And so he said, honey, I just want to bring your attention to this little cobweb up there. And she said, oh, thank you, Sam. You're such a good husband. I'm so glad that you, you know, went on like this. And he thought, isn't that great? You have such a great attitude. And so the next week, there was another cobweb. And, you know, he told her about that. And, about the third time, she fell apart, blew her cord. And, you know, why couldn't he just mind his own business and not tell her what to do? Because the inside, he's trying to be the sweet, loving, spiritual wife on the outside and have a great attitude. But it wasn't a true attitude. On the inside, she was seething and thinking, why does he mind his own business? And he's a perfectionist, and I'll never be able to please him. And so about the third time, that's all it took. Well, see, if they had a little open communication on this, it would have solved the blow-up. So keeping communication open, and I listed several things that kind of help to foster open communication. One is to be interested in him and in his work. Let him know that he and his work are the most important things in your day. And be interested. Now, this doesn't mean giving him third degree. This friend of mine who, husband is just a businessman. He's not particularly in ministry. In fact, I don't think he's has an active ministry going at the time. They're newlyweds. And she's the kind that when he'd come home would say, you know, well, who'd you call on today? And he'd say, well, what did you say? And then what did he say? And then what did he say? And then what did he say? You know, and he's just nervous, reckless, kind of trying to remember all these conversations and exactly what he said and what she said and what they said, and feels trapped, you know. But she's just hungry for every little bit of news and every little bit of information. But it wasn't bringing about good communication. So it doesn't mean, you know, badgering him. But it does mean just showing a real keen interest in the things that are his life. And then being cheerful when he comes home. nothing will make a man clam up more than a wrong greeting when he comes in the door. And it's so easy to do this. If you've been home cooped up all day and the plumbing's broken and the toilet ran over and the kids, you know, have thrown up on the rug and, you know, I mean, just those little things that happen every day. By the time he gets home, you know, you're ready to throw in the towel, and he walks in the door and says, well, the toilet ran over and it's all over the rug, and Johnny threw up on the kitchen floor, and, you know, and you just pour this venom all out on him, and he thinks, ooh, why did I ever come home? And, you know, he's had a hard day, too. But you think it's been very glamorous. If he's been in the business world or out ministering to people, you think, boy, wouldn't it be lucky to be that again. And when I was in college or when I was working, what an easy time I had. And so you pour all this vomit out on him, and he just thinks, ooh, I wish I could go back to work. Well, it doesn't set up the stage for open communication if this is the way you greet him. So greet him cheerfully. This kind of already goes along with what I said, the idea of asking him questions but not drowning him in them. Set aside time to talk. Now, husbands sometimes have to learn this. Sometimes they're the strong, silent type. And there's not very many women that are that way. Most of us really need to be talked to. And we need to know that he's giving us his undivided attention, but by the same token, he needs to know that you're giving him your undivided attention. And if every time he tries to talk to you, you're saying, while you stir what's on the stove or while you keep folding clothes or, you know, whatever you're doing, pretty soon he gets the idea that what he has to say really isn't too important to you. And so, what's to do? So, to set aside time to talk, and if he's in a mood to talk, even though you've got that bushel of clothes to do, if he's in the mood to talk, just ask the Lord to give you a quiet heart and sit down and talk with him. Because you'll learn to cherish these times, because when they get busier in the business or ministry, then any time they set aside as a special effort to talk to you becomes a cherished time. And you need to cherish these times in order to keep communication open. And another thing you need is what Gene and I call hold me time. You know, just time when you can sit and cuddle and talk. When you don't have to settle any big issues. And you don't have to, I'm not talking about making love, but just when the two of you can just sit together and talk, review things, share things, and this fosters open communication. It's done in a relaxed way. And then be sensitive not to bug him or to talk too much at the wrong time. I think all girls have an uncanny ability to do this. When they are, you know, in the midst of a deep thought, you burst in and say, well, now, James, there's this little thing I want to tell you about. And it may be so insignificant to him, and he's lost his train of thought. And then 10 minutes later, you're back in with another little thought that you're back telling. And after this goes on 3 or 4 times, he's not too interested in communicating with you. And so you need to be sensitive not to bug him or to talk too much or at the wrong time. And this takes learning. I think you learn all your life. I don't think you ever arrive at this. At least I don't feel like I ever will. All right, the fourth thing is to make home the place that he loves to come to most. This is still under supporting him in his ministry. To make home the place he loves to come to most. And under this, again, is welcoming him with a cheery word and a kiss. And, you know, just a little thing like that can be something you have to remember to do. If you're busy trying to get supper on the table, and he's due at 6 o'clock, and you promise to have supper at 6 o'clock, and you may still be, you know, stirring stuff and taking up stuff, and all of a sudden he comes in, and the tendency is just to say, wash your hands, guy, you know, and just, but to stop whatever you're doing, go over to where he is, and give him a kiss and a cheery word. It's worth every bit of effort that it takes. And then don't grill him the minute he walks in the door. Give him time to unwind. And this is questioning him about anything. If you can help it, save it for a few minutes. Let him unwind. And this is true so many times of girls that are cooped up all day long. If he's been in the house and he's got the only car and he's been out in this exciting ministry when you sat there all day, and it only took you an hour to clean your apartment, and then you sat all day long. And when he comes in, you know, you just feel like, he's from the outside. You know, just grabbing at the door and begin questioning him, grilling him. And not very many men can respond to that. They just need time. You know, when they come in, they like to pull the drawbridge back up. And their home is their castle. And the wolves have been at them all day long. And now they need to have strength put back into them. And they just need a few minutes to unwind before you start bombarding them with questions or events of the day. So if you can hold off anything in the way of expecting anything from them so they have a chance to unwind, you'll get a much more civil answer and it'll foster communication between. And another thing under making home a place you love to come to is just to be a good homemaker. Is your home a pleasant place for him to come home to? You know, is it the housework done, but not with the thought that you're such a perfectionist that it's house beautiful and he has to take his shoes off at the door and doesn't dare, you know, touch anything? Don't put your feet up there. I just polished it with lemon oil and, you know, this sort of thing. You know, can he be at home? He wants a home that's clean and neat, but he wants to be at home in it, too. Now, Sally and I both learned that in Dean's office, study back there, no matter how high the desk gets, we never put anything away. Just where he wants it. And Sally just dusts around it and moves it to dust, but puts it right back. Because it's very frustrating when he knows exactly where it is, and we've put it on a bookshelf somewhere, and we don't know where he put it. You know, we put the books away somewhere. And, you know, if that's the way he wants it in his room, that's the way you leave it. It's exactly the way he wants it. But you make sure that it's a place he loves to come home to. With the housework done, and then the idea of having meals on time, and yet here's where wives have to be flexible too. You know, if he calls and says, well, I can't make it until such and such a time, boy, there's a temptation, isn't it, to let him know that everything's going to be spoiled, and that furthermore, you worked so hard to get it done on time, and the least he could do is show up on time, and et cetera, and et cetera. And to put the burden on him of ministering to you in this way. And, boy, I confess, this is, I'd love to have supper a whole lot earlier than we get to have it, you know. It's just because I want it all to minister to me. And I have to, you know, keep putting this back to the Lord and not make my demand on him for this to be at my convenience. Or if, you know, he's unavoidably detained, do let him know about it. And do let him know what a wreck it's made of your schedule and how the least he could do is show up on time when he's trying to teach you to be punctual. We get those little bank shots in, don't we? So to be flexible and yet to do your best to be on time. And then to be content. A man loves to know that his wife is content in the role that God has cut out for her. And the fifth thing is to keep yourself looking attractive. Now, this again is, you know, if you've worked hard all day and then you're cooking a nice meal and you're really working hard at that, you think, well, now how much can you expect of me? You know, I clean house all day and now I'm working to get this good meal ready and I just don't have time to go change my clothes or put on makeup. But that's the hardest time of the day for me to leave the supper and go and freshen up before he comes home. But he really appreciates it when I take the time to do it, and I try and do it as often as I can. I shouldn't say that, as often as I want to, because you always can, generally anyway. But I think it's so important that they don't see you looking like leftover death, and then you greet them with how hard you've worked all day. And the reason you look this way is because you did all these things, you know. It's very easy to have a martyr complex and to feel a great deal of self-pity. So to freshen up and really look attractive before he comes home. And especially don't be in your grotties, you know, when he comes in. Just remember, he wants you to look feminine. He wants you to look like a lady. And the more you look like the lady, the more manly he feels. And all day long, these guys have been trying to beat out of him that which makes him a man. And what he wants most of all is for you to put that back into him when he comes home. And Proverbs 14:1 says, "A foolish woman, every foolish woman tears down her own house. The wise woman builds it up. Plucks it down with her own hands," it says. "But the wise one builds it up." And part of building it up, I think, is just to, not look like death warmed over when he comes in. And then to remember things like our hair and weight, all these little things that have a bearing on how we look. Some of us tend to feel like the marriage contract means that they've got to be loyal to us, and they've got to love us, and they've got to keep telling us how pretty we are. Well, there's no such thing, you see. And you didn't just win them to let down. It's got to be a continual winning. Because don't forget that whether he's in the ministry or in the business or whatever he's doing, Satan always will have pretty dollies built up for him to look at. And there's no man alive who has red blood in his veins that doesn't have a problem with lust. But whether it becomes an overwhelming problem depends, I feel, on the wife. And you've got to look so good to him that he prefers you above everybody else he sees. Now, he can look at a pretty girl and be kind of, smitten. But in the back of his mind, he'll want to come home to you, if you're worth coming home to. Jane said it occurred to him when he was in Acapulco with Lauren Fanny. They were doing some time together, and he said they were watching down on the beach, and they were in one of these little covered deals in a hammock, I think. And he said the flesh was parading by in all manners of form across the beach, as it naturally would in Acapulco. And he said the thought occurred to him that the flesh, a pretty girl, may attract a man, but it takes a real woman to keep him in and to keep him happy. And he also has often said, why would he go after Oleo if he has butter at home in the refrigerator? And we want to be the real thing to them. No plastic substitute. We want to be the real thing. And that's their best guarantee and protection against the lust of the flesh and against Satan getting in an attack. And another thing, and the last thing about that I have written down about supporting him in the ministry, is to be sure you live within the budget. If you're going into the full-time ministry, you may be for the first time on a very limited budget, and it may not all come in every month if you're depending on God's people to provide, because sometimes they fail. And to not be telling your mother how poorly things are going, and to not be suggesting that they send commodities from home, and to not let everybody know that things are pretty rough, but with a cheerful heart to live within the budget. And if it comes down to the wire and the baby needs milk and there's no money, God's going to provide. But it's usually just these little extra things, isn't it, that we long for. And it may be that for the first time in your life, you're on a very limited budget. If your dad and mom have been supporting you in college, they may have been doing it in quite a royal fashion. And suddenly you're limited to living on an income that's quite less than you're used to. And it may not include in it much money for new clothes or beauty powder or anything like that. But if you show your husband that you're supporting him in this, it frees his mind a great deal to give himself to the ministry. Because if he has to be concerned about you, you see, and that you're not happy, and that you're not able to live within the budget, boy, it's distracting to him, and he can't give his heart to the ministry. So those are just, I'm sure we could have made the list four times that long, but those are just a few of the thoughts that I thought of that might be of help to you.